Well, welcome to episode 44 of Muse on Minis. My name is Chad.
I'm Crump.
I'm Keith.
I'm Fat Asian.
Who else is on their podcast?
Say Dave. And we're musing and amusing. Musing and bluesing.
Oh, we forgot the crappy music.
Now let's say that I've never listened to one of our podcasts before. What do we normally talk about?
I don't know.
Wait, we have 14 hours of battle reports to go over.
Yep.
Okay, and some gym tech that I have to personally give up.
Oh, yep. Hold on.
He's going to go grab the notebook of gym tech that we keep alive.
Oh, sweet Jesus, no.
Oh, this is
terrible. Like that this has gone from good-natured ribbing to outright hostile.
Ooh, look, it's my favorite color,
Keith,
too, purple.
Jim did mention he was going to murder Keith, and I think he's driving there now.
I do like that Katie literally is holding a notebook full of gym tech.
Yeah.
I like
it's like the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yeah, point number one of both of those.
I like how he put as point number 16, some matchups require Shade to not play like a girl.
Which is hilarious, because that is his go-to with Shay, is to play like a girl.
Well, that book's interesting. It's like literally, it's like 20 points of just like general, like, he'll read that before, he used to read that before a match just to like reset his brain to like, you know. Give
but you can tell the points that had a very specific incarnation or, you know, how they came about, because like one of them is like, don't feet with Shay to move out of the control area. Apparently that must have cost him a game.
Well, he shot through it. He overshot the zone because he was so zealous in his charge. Well, he loves charging people's deployment zones if they don't have turn two.
The fact that, just bottom of turn one, you charge their stuff, is pretty sexy.
I disagree, because I don't play Shay. It's not sexy to play against.
So what podcast are we really?
Yeah, for serious.
Focus and Fury.
Focus and Fury episode.
What is episode 71?
I'm not sure. Well, they haven't podcasted it. Their last podcast was, I think, in 2011.
You mean our last podcast?
Was when they're...
The sad thing is that you're not even joking.
I like if you go to Focus and Fury's website, there's always a thread that starts every 4 days. Is their podcast dead? And everyone's like, yeah. I guess we would be episode 71 of Focus and Fury.
When was 70 posted?
Last 70 was posted to here. It's before the internet, so I have to actually get the notebook out.
It is before.
No, actually, they posted one in November. They've posted, that was after War Machine Weekend. Oh, they posted two in the last 6 months. So that's not bad.
So is this the episode we're just going to burn all the bridges?
Yeah, like I was going to say, everyone else's podcast is going to be said, don't listen to those crippled system assholes.
We love all of them, and they love us.
I think we're actually episode 12.
Yeah, this is episode 12.
And my name is actually, I think, Brian, and I play Crix.
That's true.
And I'm Katie Bad Horse.
I'm Nathan Radio Fan.
I'm still Jeremy Valiant 418.
I was hoping we'd get more complicated than that, but nope.
Who else is on this podcast? I'm Andy, Major Tusk on the forums, and I play Trolls.
People have asked for us to get Absent on the forum. He was actually here all day. As soon as we recorded, he just ran out the door.
Yeah, like literally.
I worked very hard to try to get Absent. We went to Best Buy, and I purposely wasted a ton of time at Best Buy to get him to be on the podcast.
And then he bailed.
Yeah.
He does not want to give out his information. That's why he's probably going to murder Keith.
Well, and I told him that we don't talk about War Machine on this podcast, and he didn't believe me.
Yeah, I told him we'd do nothing but talk about Fifth Element, which is like his favorite movie ever, so we could have done that.
If we talked about Pitch Black and Fifth Element for the entire podcast, he'd be fine. We could quote it all now and see which. We could test Katie. We could throw a Pitch Black out.
She wouldn't know
quotes
Pitch Black.
Or
Fifth Element?
Yeah, Fifth Element. I don't know if she knows.
Multipass?
I've learned not to answer questions about whether I know a movie or not.
All right.
She's going to plead the fifth about Fifth Element.
Oh, that was terrible.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was.
I don't get it. Please explain. I didn't understand, Jeremy.
It wasn't a very good joke. That's the joke.
A pretty good joke. I like it.
You liked it, so it wasn't a good joke then. Well, as long as we're burning bridges with other podcasts, do we want to talk about people we hate on the internet now?
Not people we hate.
Opinions we hate.
Opinions. Yeah, we like the person. We just don't like what they have to say.
Yeah, well, let's say that our liking the person or not liking the opinion isn't the topic at hand. We're focusing on things the internet believes that we think are stupid and wrong.
So no individual person. We just read a saying or we read a belief and we're like, that's stupid.
Right.
And we're mad at them.
Yeah, like, it doesn't matter who said it, because usually it'll be 15 different people saying it. It's just all of them are dumb.
This worked out really well for Muse and Minis when they complained about Signer forms. They didn't get a bunch of hate because of that. So we're learning.
For example, in our thread for our last podcast, I said that I was going to talk about how wrong the internet was about Nail. And so Muse on Minis was kind enough to do that for me yesterday. So thanks, guys. Or the day before yesterday. Whatever.
Recently.
so I've learned not to mention things we're going to do on upcoming podcasts.
One last thing about Nail. Jim had talked to Nail a lot about Beanish when Beanish played a lot. And Jim had this whole entire speech he has about Nail, about how when you play Nail, it's like a mini game within the game.
Yep.
And then when someone was quoting Beanish like said word for word what Jim said, but didn't give Jim credit.
Yeah.
So when Jim was reading that yesterday, he's like, "What the hell?" Because it was a word for word quote.
Oh yeah,
what Jim had told Beanish.
That's what Jim always says about Nail. Yeah. It's a mini game in the game.
Yeah, it's just hilarious to have that attributed to Beanish.
Yeah, which I'm not saying Beanish didn't say it. He just got it from Jim.
Yes. But anyway, that's a good example. The internet is retarded and stupid and wrong about Nail. Nail is amazing. He's a phenomenal two-point solo. If you suck at the game, he'll blow up on your own caster, and then you just suck, so it's your own fault. But if you know how to play him, he's so stupendously good.
I think there is always that one in a big chance. Your opponent could be super clever.
If there's one in 100, so like 1 in 100, maybe he clips you instead. And what happened that 1 in 100 time is that you don't cast spells for a turn. The other 99 times.
The thing with Nail is, even at the end of the day, if it's not useful against your opponent, he's still like he'd be a decent 2-point solo without Arcane Annihilation. He wouldn't be great, but he'd be okay. Arcane Annihilation's amazing.
He is reach, stealth, immune to magic.
Yeah.
He can mess some stuff up.
Yeah. When Pal 13, Matt 7.
Yeah.
I literally ask my opponent when I sit on a ride, I'm like, "Where's Nail?" They go, "I don't play him." I'm like, Thank you. But that's my first question, "Where's Nail?" And then, "Where's that damn Knockdown Gun Jack?"
Yeah.
But first it's Nail, and then I go to the next things. Because I know
Knockdown Gun has the two swords, so he's easy to pick up.
And he's newer.
And he also has Wailing. Like, how is all that on the same fucking Jack?
Oh, that Banshee.
And he's the only one of the new Jacks that's range 12 instead of 10. The others are all range 10. He's like, "Nope, range 12.
Yeah, he's just the best in every way, shape, and form.
Yup.
I mean, he's awful. Don't take him. He's useless, just like
the
shrimp.
And Grievous on his weapons, his melee weapons. Why the hell not?
Why not?
Love
good times.
Guy. Love that guy.
Yeah, so. Fuck you.
So was Nail what you wanted to rate?
No, that was an example.
Okay.
Because it was stolen by Muse on Minis people, because they're awful human beings.
Well, we can forgive them, because that's the first offense.
Yeah, they've never done that before. That's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
Wait. Yes. Sarcasm. I'm trying to figure out the new math that we're using for that to be the first offense. We're like in hexadecimal or something. It's offense G.
Yeah.
It's funny because hexadecimal and
so
goes up to
this
F.
This was your idea.
Programming
did
joke.
You have an example that wasn't stolen by Muse on Minis?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
But Katie was going to go first.
Oh, Katie's going to go first.
I didn't realize it was going first. I just thought of something.
That's because I didn't tell you.
Surprise.
Shock.
Surprise. Go.
So the one thing that I find confusing is everyone's always like, the Feral's so good. He's like one of the best beasts in Circle. And I have just found him to be just not good, except for with Pikarur. Like, I can understand once he gets Lightning Tendrils, he'd be amazing. But
I'd like to point out that Katie's a little hungover today. When she was talking about how terribly bad the Feral was on Friday, I thought she was going to hurt me. She was so angry at the world in general.
Well, because so many people were like, "Oh, the Feral's so good." So I was like, you know what? I'll give him another shot, because I started to play him when I picked up Circle, and I was like, he doesn't seem as good, so I'll just move on. And the internet was like, "Oh, he's so good." So I was like, I'll give him another shot, and he's just not. Like, he's 9 points instead of 10, so he's a little bit cheaper than the Stalker, but the Stalker has Sprint, the Stalker has Reach.
Which is the best passive ability to have on anything.
He's got Berserk.
But the Stalker can't two-handed throw things.
No, he can't. But I feel
the Stalker's better against, or the Feral's better against Nail.
But
you could one hand and throw him, and it just doesn't matter.
But I guess the 1-for-1 9-point trade with him would be the Pureblood, and the Pureblood is just outright better because he's got Bless, he's got a Spray. Here's the thing with Warp Wolves. I feel like if you have to warp for something other than strength, you're not going to kill what you need to kill unless you're doing a bunch of infantry. And what can the Feral kill? 3 infantry tops. Whereas the Stalker can go up there, catch a lot more because of Reach, and then also Berserk. So he's just going to do more in general.
Yeah.
And so if you throw a Feral up against a Heavy, but he's too far away, but you took him because of speed or whatever, he's just not going to do as much damage as somebody else would have. And I think it's...
And is he the same speed as a Stalker normally?
Yes.
So warping for speed just...
gives him plus 2. So,
the Stalker...
Reach.
Yeah.
It
so it's kind of like the people who say that the Freebooter's good compared to a Nomad because it can warp for speed, while Reach is just as good already.
But because you did that, you can't warp for strength.
Right.
And there's so many other ways in Circle to get things to move that you... shouldn't need the speed. So I guess I just don't see why everyone is so like, oh man, he's the best, because I just don't think he is.
I think with somebody with sprint, he could be a good finisher beast. Like, you send in a couple of infantry in to soften up something, and then he can go in there, rip out the last part of it if he needs speed to do it.
But the stalker, but why wouldn't is the you one bring, with sprint.
Even yeah. stalker yeah. aside, like, why wouldn't you bring the pureblood instead of him? The pureblood is...
And the pureblood one, plus one mad and has a spray and is ghostly.
Uh-huh. Like, and the pureblood is like, the same PS,
here,
right?
Ghostly as a warp.
I don't remember for sure, but it'd be pretty close.
Yeah, maybe one off.
And yeah, and he has ghostly, and if you bring the pureblood, everyone else can get ghostly as well. And so it's like, I just don't see why anyone would bring him as opposed to any of the other warp wolves, unless you were short on points, but then you'd just be like pureblood.
Yeah.
And, like, you would lose one of your melee attacks, but then you have a spray and you can catch, like, a ton of infantry.
As a Crix player, I would always want to see the Feral.
Yeah.
I'm always happy when I see that over the other options.
Yeah.
But, man, do I hate seeing the other ones.
Well, the Stalker and the Pureblood are both real bad for Crix.
Oh, yeah, those things rip my armies apart. I mean, no, you should use Tread the Feral somewhere, Katie.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you're, like, again, if you're playing P. Kruger, then I can see why he'd be amazing, because then you have three initials that all have reach.
And Lightning Tendrils is such a great spell.
Yeah, Lightning Tendrils fixes a lot of things. Lightning Tendrils on... You could also just put Lightning Tendrils on that one unit you have that has Gang and not Reach, and all of a sudden they're a Reach Gang unit, which is amazing.
Which should not be allowed.
Which is amazing.
So anyway, that's my rant about what I think the internet is wrong about, specifically. Or any list that people are like, hey, look at these lists. Do anybody think it's tournament worthy? And they only have one set of stones. That's also retarded. You should always have two sets of stones. Like, it's 2 points for the second set. It's always worth it.
Yeah, but those ones don't have stealth, Katie. I mean,
it
what's
doesn't
the
matter.
Point?
I see lists that don't have the UA. They'll bring one or two sets of stones with no UA.
UA is 1 point. It's always worth it. Yeah. If you're like, I need to drop a point from this list, it is not the UA to the stones. Like, if you're only using the stones for shifting, you're doing it wrong. You just are.
Yeah. You've got a caster, and you've got 5 points in stones plus UA, then you build your list.
Yes. That is how I always start off.
It's kind of like how you build a Menoth list with Choir.
Yeah.
You know,
or a troll list with the Creel Stone.
No.
It's not become more viable not to.
Really?
In Mark II in general, you can just say, to hell with the Creel Stone.
I just never
with
see
stuff like the Fen Blades and things like that, trolls don't have to brick up as much.
That's true.
Have a lot more speed. They can just get out there. In Mark I, when all they did was walk forward 4 inches a turn and hope they weren't annihilated by Weapon Masters and Crix, then you had to have the stone.
Well, I think in a two-list format, one, I mean, you'll probably still see them in one, but yeah, they don't need to be in both.
Yeah, they're not mandatory anymore.
It's a battery that's sometimes really hard to fill.
That's true.
At least
some casters really
some
have trouble putting Fury in it.
Because I play Doomshaper's theme all the time, and man, playing it outside of that theme, when I don't get the 5 Fury that just goes in there by bonus... It's annoying trying to fill it.
Yeah.
That list wasn't beaten out of you last event.
No. Okay. No. Well, when I didn't face 4 magic user anti-magic armies in a row.
I always enjoy when troll players throw all of their fury into the stone on turn 1 against E-Lilith. Turns out to work out well for me. It's like, oh, you want to just drop all your spare transfers on turn 1? Sure. I'm okay with that. I don't care about that extra couple of arm in that when I feat.
Right.
Not even a little.
It's not armor. If I'm dropping the stone.
The stone. Like, they got to put at least 1 fury in there to get that extra 2 armor.
Yeah.
And they're like, I gotta fill it up, because that's what I do my first turn, is I just dump all my spare fury in the stone. And I'm like, okay.
Well,
hopefully they are out of your threat range.
Yeah. And,
if they're not, they're bad enough you would have beat them anyway.
If I went first, they're not out of my threat range.
It don't matter. Don't matter, because all I have to do is one thing. And it's put Flaming Fists on my caster.
Have the Pyre set. Troll. God, yeah. I hate that guy. Even if it's like, oh, you've got a Pyre Troll? Oh, I guess I'll take my other list.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
Does that do fire immunity now?
Yep.
I thought it just gave you fire on your weapons and plus 2 strength.
Each of the elemental trolls gives immunity to their element.
Yeah. I knew that the other two did. I didn't realize the fire one did as well.
Oh, yeah.
He dicks over Elo super
he
hard.
Is the,
What a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that E-Lilith isn't amazing anyway, because she is, but it is really unfortunate that troll players have started to play Pyre Trolls against her.
That's what I've always taken in my list, mainly because I like AoE auto-fire.
Yeah.
That's, you know...
Well, and he's only like 5 points, right?
Hmm?
He's 5 points?
He's 5 points.
Yeah, he's great for 5 points.
He's a great soul. And speaking of other good troll lights, fucking Storm Troll.
God damn it.
Oh, God, is Storm
Turns
Troll
out
good?
That guy's good.
Holy shit. I played him for the first time in one event, and he's not leaving any one of my lists. It's amazing. One point Animus. So
I'm
good.
Curious if the internet likes him or not.
Probably not.
I don't think they like any of the elemental trolls. Like, I hear people say the pyre trolls bad all the time on the forums.
Really? Those people are wrong.
They are
like,
wrong.
But when I played trolls, I stopped taking the mauler because for half the price, I could have almost as good of an Animus. Like, it's just for nothing else than an Animus.
Or no, the pyre troll now.
Yeah, the pyre instead of the mauler. It's like, instead of the plus three, I can have plus two. That's almost as good, and it was half as many points in my list.
Yep.
And I came with an AoE that's auto fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's so good taking out, like, little things.
Yep.
Yeah.
High defense doesn't like auto fire.
No.
No.
Nor does it like fucking electro leaps.
No. No, it doesn't.
Damn it.
Those are not cool either.
Oh, so good.
Oh, well. No. Jeremy, is anybody you think is an idiot? I'm sorry,
well,
they're an opinion Rhett, that you
so
think
a lot,
is...
There's a lot of opinions about Rhett that I think are wrong. I mean, just off the top of my head, there's the people that think Mage Hunter Strike Force is only good in Snipe Feet Go. They're dumb and wrong. It turns out that Snipe Feet Go, while a legitimate thing against, I don't know, a small handful of casters, most competitive casters is not fantastic against. Blows the shit up out of, like, the Hayley's, sure, but... So that one's unfortunate. The people that think Hulk Hands, the Artificer, is bad.
I hate Hulk Hands.
He's so good. He is one of the best 3 points in the game. Like, he's not Gorman good, but he's really good.
And Gorman's only two.
And Gorman's only two, because fuck that guy. The other
Are
thing,
you going to expound at all on any of these?
Well,
just list?
So the Mage Hunter Strike Force, the problem with the Mage Hunter Strike Force is people think that they're just an auto kill against any caster. It's just like, well, if their caster's in range and I snipe with Raven and I do feet and then I win. Well, not really, because they're rat six. They're quite possibly not aiming. So even with boosted to hits, there are some casters where your to hit odds are just terrible if they're on a hill. If they're off of a hill, most casters are in good shape. But if they're like, oh, you're playing Raven with Mage Hunter Strike Force, I'm going to sit on this hill all game. That hill can screw your assassination all by itself.
Yeah, if they're one of the natural 16 or
17. Yeah, exactly. And then any caster that's a natural 17 or more armor, just don't even bother. Like, Ephiora, go home.
I've told this story before, but it's one of my favorite moments, is the first time I faced Snipe Beat Go was in a tournament, and I was playing Gorton, and the kid had no tactics at all. Like, I snipe, I feed, I go.
Yeah.
And so he did it, he booed, he went to shoot, and he's like, all right, what's your caster's armor? And I said, 19. And he said, well, I ignore her focus. And I said,
19.
I know. I know. And then he just went, oh. He just, like, slumped over dejectedly.
Yeah. Gorton, I actually would far rather have a science feat against. The science feat makes the Mage Hunters legitimately scary to him.
Better, yeah.
What's a science feat again?
His is
boosted damage.
Additional die damage, yeah. Which is better.
Well, yeah. Same thing.
Same thing on the
concern.
Infantry, yeah. So the Mage Hunter Strike Force, while Snipe Feet Go is not, like, is great against certain casters, it's not the thing. What's great about them is all of the infantry in the game that you would never play without a buff, turns out they don't have that buff against Mage Hunter Strike Force. So, like, what the fuck? The Menoth guys that you always put D Ward on, that are always the Blessed Crossbow.
Or like Arcane Shielded Boom Howlers.
Yeah, or Arcane Shielded Boom Howlers. It's just like almost any of those infantry in the game, if you aim, you're just killing one with every single Mage Hunter Strike Force unit. And you're range 12 and you're stealth, so you're just like, I'm going to sit here, I'm going to move up on turn one, and then I'm going to sit here and I'm just going to rip apart whatever infantry come towards me.
They can see through clouds too, right?
They see through everything.
So yeah,
they don't need line of sight. They can have their butt facing the enemy army just for funsies. They can be behind a building.
Yeah, because they take apart my druids.
No, they can see them. They can't shoot them.
Yes, they can.
No, they can't.
While shooting with the ranged weapons, this unit ignores all line of sight restrictions.
Right, but shooting, there's two requirements for attacking something. One is line of sight, and one is that they're in your front arc. Those are independent.
Showing your butt.
Those are independent.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I've legitimately been told by people that you didn't have
to
have your front arc.
No, you can only attack things that are in your front arc, and you have to have line of sight. Those are independent things. 99% of the time, it's going to be the same thing.
Well, right.
But
with my Mage Hunter Strike Forces, like, I've never even bothered. Like, I don't even look where their front arc is. I just don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might want to start looking at the front arc.
Yeah.
That's humorous. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah,
they
don't have, like,
the
Death Jack.
Then,
yeah, exactly. Death Jack
right.
can attack
but that's
in
why,
any arc.
But. That's why, like, the Death Jack doesn't say can see all around. It says specifically the front arc is all the way around. Yeah.
Same with, like, Bird's Eye and stuff on Virus. Uh-huh. Interesting. So anyway, they ignore everything except a hill, and they're fantastic. They're not great against hordes, because in general, the hordes mechanic for transfers, they can be frustrating for
they
a Horde
player. Ignore animuses.
They don't ignore animuses that are cast thing, by... Yeah, like by the Kree. Beast. Yeah, like, Kree is a bitch. And they struggle to kill a Horde caster in general, just because of the way transfer mechanic works.
Well, on the other hand, it depends on the damage they're doing, because Horde casters don't like taking 2 damage.
No, they don't.
They really don't like taking 2 or 3
you
damage.
You can be annoying, and so, but you're not going to kill them.
Well, that's not necessarily... I mean, the thing is, if you shoot... Like, let's say you get the whole unit on somebody with, okay, like, 3 transfers.
Sure.
That means you're going to hit them... Well, let's say you do 2 damage with each attack. Even if they transfer 3 of them, you're doing 14 damage. I mean,
the problem is what winds up happening is you spike a couple of times, they transfer those.
Right.
And you
but
go
if those couple
times.
Of ones are towards the end, like if a guy spikes to 4, they have to transfer that, and then if the last guy spikes to 6, they're out of transfer. You know, it's nickel and diamond Horde casters to death is really goddamn annoying.
It is. And I mean, and they're good that way, but like what I love them for is, well, A, ripping apart jacks or colossals, especially with a scion, but just ripping apart infantry. Like there's a lot of infantry you just don't realize how easy they are to kill. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're a great attrition unit.
And War Machine Weekend, I tied up somebody's Mage Hunter Strike Force, you know, because I didn't want to be snipe-feeded Godon. And so I tie up, like, 7 of the 10.
Yeah.
And so he said, okay, they're all forfeiting to aim.
Yep.
I'm feeding with Raven.
Yep.
This one who's unengaged is going to shoot into melee.
Yep.
Needing, like, an 8, you know, because they're rat whatever the hell, and freeze up that guy. And then they just killed all the guys that were tied up, and they had 3 people to spare.
Yep.
It's like, the other
thing that's great is, like, I've had people run a jack in to engage them because I don't want them shooting my jack. I'm like, okay, there's still Jack Hunter, and by the way, CMA. Your Jack explodes.
Yeah.
I dare you to tie them up with a Reach Jack. Yeah. It will die. It's fantastic. So anyway, they're fantastic. The Artificer, I cannot explain how necessary the Ignoring Blast damage is for Rhett. And it's funny to me, because a lot of people realize how good Discordia is, and that his +2 armor and no blast damage is amazing.
Her.
Whatever. But people don't realize how good the Hulkans is for, you know, 7 points less.
Well, you stack the 2 of them, too, and you're +2, +2.
Yeah. I have a lot of lists that's Discordia, 2 Hulkans, and it's just like, you have blast damage, that's cute.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just pretend you didn't bring those points.
Well, still, just your standard defense against shooting. It's amazing how
+2 defense against all shooting, yeah.
Those models just up your game against the range game, and the range game is big right now.
Yeah. And the Hulkans are built-in Pathfinder, which comes out of nowhere for people. Mat 7, Pal 13, 2 attacks with beatback. Like, I've lost track of how many times people will run something into my unit that I'm using them to, like, protect the guns. And then I'm like, oh, okay, so my guy's going to run and he's going to beat back one of your guys and crush him. You're going to step over an inch, beat back your other guy. Now my gun unit is mostly unengaged. Sucks to be you. Like, they're fantastic.
Yeah. And so, they're also a medium-based model that they can't be trampled over.
Yep. I've used them against Iskar's feet, like, just to get in the way of, like, Deathjack and Tartarus and shit. I guess not Tartarus, but like Deathjack especially.
They have a range gun, don't they?
They do have a range bust. The problem is they're only magic ability 6 as opposed to their mat 7. So their gun is a really cool gun because it's half of Hellmouth. It does the pulling in or pushing out. You can pull in or push out like with Hellmouth, but it then doesn't do damage in
range. Well, Hellmouth is only pull in.
Oh, okay, yeah. so you can pull or push, but then you don't damage in an AoE. You only damage the primary target. It's still a really useful spell.
Still useful.
Jim uses Gareth to give away a little Jim tech. He loves him with Gareth.
In the world of Colossals and Gargantuans, you cannot oversell blast immunity.
Yeah.
You cannot.
No. Yeah, like, because the answer, a lot of people said the answer to, like, Rhett doesn't have an answer to the Galleon because he'll just AoE your shit. And what actually winds up happening is you put 2 Hulkans in your Mage Hunter Strike Force. He will kill those 2 Hulkans dead in one turn of his shooting, and then they're dead, and then I feat with Ossian, and now you don't have Galleon. I win that game. I lost 6 points, you lost 20.
19.
Whatever. I just assume all Colossals and Gargantuans are ish 20.
Ish, yeah, 20-ish.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's probably other stuff too, but those are the two that I hear a lot in Rhett that I think are just kind of wrong. Is Major and Strike Force is only good for Snipe Pico, and Hulkans are bad.
Cool. You hear that, Internet? You're stupid.
You're welcome.
Andy, you got something?
Not really, I don't pay attention to the Internet.
Okay.
I actually do not go to any of the faction forums. I just, after hearing so many people talk about how horrible they are, I don't go. I just rather not do that.
Wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll go to them once in a while, but it's nothing. I don't really care about the complaining. I just play what I want to play, and that's it.
That's probably healthier.
It probably is healthier.
Whereas I go to the forum and rage.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
Yeah, I'm going to get kicked out of the press gang one of these days.
The forums have their point. I mean,
they do.
It is interesting. I mean, I like to go... I mean, obviously, the rules forum is a different thing. It's good. It's good to keep up with the rules forum. And, I, you know, it's fun to see when... The book comes out on March 13th, so there's going to be spoilers ahead of time. So obviously we're all going to be flooding to the forums to read all the spoilers,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and whatnot. But and every so often, I see an interesting tidbit here and there. I mean, there is good things posted online. It's just, it's the internet, so it's good and bad.
Well, the other thing, too, is they might have something that's legitimately good that you didn't think of, and everyone else is aware of it, and you're not.
No, we're flawless.
Okay.
I tend to, actually, to be honest with you, I tend to ask other people around me more opinions, people that I play against or people that I look to for other things. That's who I ask for opinions on what I should play. I don't hate everything about the privateer forums, I guess.
Just the people?
No, just the passion forums I really stay away from. But I do go to the general forum. I do like the rules forum, obviously.
Right.
Keep up track on that, and I do like the painted miniature. The miniature section is probably the best section on there. I like it a lot.
Well, fine. That's not hateful enough, Brian. What do you, more hatred.
Well, I could start off generically, and it's more of some of this. Not this is even the main. This is more of the some of the sub forums. Not even privateer, like Focus and Fury or some of the other ones. It's like there's so many closed minded individuals out there. It's so frustrating trying to read their posts. I mean, they state their opinion, which is fine, because having an opinion is, it's whatever. But then they just don't care what you're... They post their opinion, and then they post why, no matter every single counterpoint, you're dumb and stupid because you don't agree with me. It just drives me nuts on some of those forums where people will make some ridiculous statement, and then they just, basically yell down at every other person out there because they don't agree with them.
Well, you're just clearly wrong on whatever you're saying. Yeah, they're trying to help you, but you're being a closed-minded individual here,
yeah,
Brian.
Probably. Yeah, that's me, closed-minded individual. But as far as more specific things in the game where the internet says something that drives me nuts is, I always hear, it's always easy when you see I still swear people in the Scorn forum, Rashath doesn't get very much credit. He's still considered to be a poor caster, and I love that guy so much, and I've done so well in events with him. And it's like you see people, they just don't think he's a bottom-tier caster. But it's that's the most common arguments out there is, people saying, this caster's good, this caster's bad. It's always fun in the Crix form. It's like, they always say the Gore Shades are bad. It's like, the Gore Shades are, in the Crix world, probably the lower tier of a Crix caster, but in the scope of the game, they're still legitimately dangerous. It's just I mean, they're no, Pete Gore Shade's no E. Danny or E. Gatsby, but when I fight plenty of factions, I still can roll over them pretty easily. So people keep thinking, I hate that mentality. Well, it's not the best caster, so it's the worst caster. Well, no, it's just not the best. Not being the best doesn't make you the worst. Yeah. I mean, there are legitimately units that are pretty poor out there.
Not first or last. I learned that from Ricky Bobby.
Well, I mean, I do. I believe that as far as standings go, as far as list design, I think if someone has a plan and a model, go with it. I just don't like that whole mentality, which I was going to go more actually. Crossover with a little bit of my recommendation for later. But.
Yeah. Ooh. It's like a sneak preview.
Yes, yeah. Just a taste.
That's trailer.
Just a tip.
Just the tip.
Bok, bok.
I like how you hip checked them after that. That was cute.
Yeah.
I'm disturbingly aroused right now.
No, well, if you would be unaroused, we can talk about how we can discuss our topic before the podcast and how the shower,
no,
and the brush and the egg beater.
Right. Let's not talk
you
about that.
You gotta break it up.
Yes, let's break this up. Yeah, it's a valid point. Break it up. I had one thing I was going to talk about being stupid and wrong, but then I accidentally brought up a second thing that's stupid and wrong, and I'm going to switch to the second thing, which is if you're bringing a freebooter in your list. You're stupid and wrong.
I let that one go. I thought you might bring a freebooter.
Because it came up with the feral and the stalker. The freebooter is the wrong choice. No, not even with whatever combo you think you're doing. It's just just wrong. Like, for the exact same point cost, you can have something that's better in every way, shape, and form because it has reach and higher armor and doesn't spend focus to wreck itself.
One of your entire battle is in deep water.
Yes, yes. If your entire battle is in deep water, then you're dumb and wrong. The freebooter is defense 13, armor crap so it dies versus the Nomad's 10-19, so the Nomad doesn't die instantly. And the big thing is people love about the Freebooter is trash. Trash. So you like you knock something down, and boom, bickety-bam, your shitty POW 14 claws are now POW 17 and a half. Well, guess who has a POW 17 all the time and doesn't need their target knocked down and has reach? The Nomad.
Freebooter's faster.
That's true. If you spend a focus to destroy your own jack, it makes up the 2 inches it doesn't have all the time due to not having reach.
Yeah.
So good job there. And there's people who break down the math, but like if your target is between 5 and 5.5 inches, or like there's like a little inch and a half size window where if your target is there, already knocked down without anything in the way, so you can just walk up to it, then the Freebooter does like 3 points of damage more. In every other situation ever, it's awful and stupid and wrong.
What if I'm casting Kreos's feet and my caster is base to base with my Freebooter? Oh, he's not knocked down.
Good job there. Bam. That's true. If you are bringing the Freebooter for Lash, you're stupid and wrong because you could have brought a Mariner instead. And the Mariner also has Lash and has an awesome gun.
My counterpoints are being shot down.
Like your caster isn't base to base with a low defense jack in the first place.
It's just as bad as being knocked down. Yeah.
Might as well be knocked down.
Yeah. And if your opponent has Kreos, then you should, like, you can't purify away Batten.
Nope.
Because it's not an upkeep. So if you're playing Pirates and your opponent has Kreos, then you just bring Bart and don't get knocked down by the feet.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. Or, you know, or just have Bosun Grogspar and not get knocked down by the feet.
Yep.
Because Bosun existing is not an upkeep that can be purified away. So, you know, there's a couple ideas for you that don't involve taking the worst jack in the game. But I will admit there's one argument. I will caveat there's one argument, which is the, what if I think the Freebooter looks beautiful? Okay. Although, actually, I have a solution to that, which was I took a Freebooter, ripped its arms off, put Nomad arms on there, and now I have a really sexy-looking pirate Nomad.
I think something you guys both have brought up that like, you danced around a little bit is one of the most famous Fat Asian quotes, in my opinion, which is, if it's a heavy and it doesn't have a gun and it doesn't have reach, I'm not interested.
Which then we were just fine with Bronzeback.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Bronzeback does, but the thing with the Bronzeback is it's a Bronzeback. Yeah, like, at the end of the day, that's like saying, you know, Speed 5 infantry that don't have reach are pretty bad. Unless they're Bane Thralls.
Death
Jack. And
then
you can go fuck yourself.
I know. It's a good quote, but it's just funny because you can say, like, yeah. Death Jack rides back and it breaks his...
It does. But for the most part, like, most of the Jacks in the game, it's, like, 100% true. Like, if Disco didn't have a spray and he just had his Mopey 2 non-reach 16s, I would take my POW 17 reach weapons in faction every other time.
If the free... Like, the thing is, you can make up for it. And, like, the Bronzeback has the beatback and stuff like that. Like, the Freebooter has grab and smash. If the Freebooter was 5 points... Or if the speed buff didn't cost a focus and you just took the damage to the movement or something,
yeah, that'd be fine.
Then he'd be fieldable. Yeah, then he'd have something going on.
My personal fix for to make a difference is to make the Nomad 7 points.
You can burn in hell.
That no one ever seems to. At least
I have a 7 point Nomad.
The merc players never really agree with me, but I think just make the Nomad 7 points.
Nomad's a 6 point Jack.
I know.
Barely. I'm overspending for that. Look at that card.
That Nomad's amazing.
He has no special abilities at all. That's a blank card. He should probably be like 4 or 5.
I would trade you Nomads for Slayers.
You think?
Slayers have all those special abilities, though.
Yeah, yeah. I'll still trade you.
Nomads.
Do they still have crit venom?
Nomads don't,
crit,
no. No. Slayers do not have the crit corrosion, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of which, remember Abulation? That was a weird ability.
I don't even remember it.
That was the ability, like, because nobody was taking Defilers, or I'm going to, you know, I'll be conspiracy theorist here because 1 plus 1 equals 2, but when nobody was taking Defilers in Mark 1, because what the heck's the point? When the Cankerworm came out, he had an ability called Abulation, which was when he was attacking something that was corroded, he became a Weapon Master.
Oh, yes, yeah, okay.
So all of a sudden, everybody was bringing Defilers because you just, like, shoot a jack, corrode it, and then send the Cankerworm after it.
Well, yeah,
oh, who was so
too.
Broken. The Cankerworm was the, oh, God.
He's still pretty good. I had somebody
Mark
abuse
one,
me pretty
was
hard
retarded.
With him.
Mark one, he was insane. He would just wipe out entire units and then skitter away giggling. Oh, it was geez. He was absurdly overpowered.
Yeah. That's okay.
Because he had the Abulation and he had armor piercing. So it's like, geez. Oh, just murder your heavy. So then he'd just do that and walk away. And like, yeah, he would take a, like a, every time he killed a living model, he gained a focus. which you could then spend to buy an attack to kill a wing model to gain a focus. And so you'd grab something's reach weapon, so all of a sudden he's got reach and he's just tearing through infantry, and then he skitters away afterwards, and it was just wonderful when I was a Crix player. But long story short, fuck the freebooter.
Good point. Valid point, sir.
Ka-chow.
And now that we've yelled and said what everybody's dumb and how we don't want to hear their opinion, should we tell people how they can email us?
Oh, yeah. If you think that you have an opinion that's worth a damn, you're probably wrong. But you can still send it to us so we can mock it, which I forgot what the new the email is.
Podcast at crippledsystem.com.
Yep. Podcast at crippledsystem.
Yeah. So email us. I think it would be really cool if we got some good ideas from people. I know we occasionally steal ideas already from the forum that people talk about in our threads, but if people have things they want to hear about.
You have cause and effect backwards.
Yeah, you were backwards.
No. Like we've brought up stuff that people have mentioned into the threads for our podcast.
We don't
before.
Steal it. We
talk about something they asked about.
We deign to pay attention
to
their...
We bring value to their opinions.
Yeah. Yeah. We stoop low enough to answer their requested information.
So we're never going to get an email ever. Ever. Ever.
Maybe. I'm going to sign us up for all the penis enlargement pills. Then we can be here like, so the topic today is penis enlargement.
Again.
Yeah.
Still not working.
Nope. Nope. Katie's penis still small.
Jeremy's disappointed.
I'm really not.
Give him a tennis ball.
Anyway, so... I you're making all these horrible references to Katie's birthday party yesterday, and I wasn't there, so I don't get these horrible references. But I'm happy. I'm so happy that I don't get these horrible references.
You missed out. It was a great party.
It was a great thing.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a good 4 or 5 hours of fun. Yep.
It was not, you know, the highlight of human conversation.
No.
It was almost worse than our podcast as far as how...
Oh, it was worse than our podcast. Yeah,
was it worse than episode 6?
It was worse than episode 6.
Yeah, it was pretty...
It was worse than the bucket.
I mean, the bucket was brought up as
the bucket was specifically brought up.
Wow.
I mean, you guys had nice food for everyone. There was plenty of alcohol for people to drink.
Yep. Was it like get complaints at Denny's level?
It would be like escorted from Denny's.
Yeah, we would have been escorted.
Oh, yeah. One
Denny's
of those
days.
Denny's
would have thanked us not to come back.
9 out of 10 people brought Katie alcohol.
That's true. Almost all of Katie's presents were alcohol.
Felt a little bit like maybe I'm making a reputation for myself.
Hey, did your slutty friend with the big tits show up?
She did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she wasn't sure listening to this. So, hey, how's it going?
Are there pictures?
You know, there are any pictures from me.
Well, we took pictures with Ted.
I almost took a picture.
Is Ted slutty with big tits?
Ted is a boy.
Well, then you took pictures of the wrong person.
Hold on. I forgot. There might have been a guy there named Dean or a girl there.
Dean. God damn it. Gene.
Oh, that was amazing.
Dean Cain was there?
No.
We were talking about names
that could be female or male, and then Jeremy is going off on how...
I didn't go off on it.
You didn't mention.
You were like, Dean is one of those names. And then we were like, that doesn't really make sense.
No,
and you like defended it for 5 minutes.
And then I realized that I was wrong.
And then after we stopped talking about it, you're like, oh, I meant Gene.
One of those times where you should have just cut your losses where you were.
No,
I dated a girl named Dean.
Just cut my losses.
I don't think I've ever met a female.
No, I did not date a girl. Dean.
Well, I mean, she had a nice penis.
That girl was hung.
So there was that problem in a court. Well, yeah. I mean, Katie's party was fun. People were hanging out. We played some... Well, a little bit. We stopped the games and majority of people got there.
We did.
Yes.
But we had fun playing.
That wasn't really a gaming crowd.
No,
so
it
we
wasn't.
Just, we just
but we had fun.
That.
And then we went out and watched the UFC, a group of us. Andy came and Jim and Dad and his brothers and stuff. We all went out and saw over at Legends.
Yeah, which I had never been to before.
Me neither. It's actually, I always thought it was a dive from the outside. It's a fairly nice bar.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's not like my style of bar because it's a sports bar, but it's a nice bar.
Well, I thought it was going to be more like a bar, but there were like booths and tables.
Well, it's a sports
and
bar. It's
nobody
what sports bars like.
Nobody was standing.
Yeah. It's a sports bar.
I don't know.
I'm too old to stand.
Yeah,
the thing that still struck me as the weirdest
you
was
lean on your
everyone
frame.
There was there to watch the UFC fight, and there was one table that was these five girls there together, and the rest of the room is like 95% male, with a few of them that brought their girlfriends along that are yawning and pretending that they're falling asleep.
No, there was a girl behind Andy and Jim that she had the greatest faces when she was watching the fight. It was pretty fantastic.
I'm kind of sad I
missed that.
Did
you take pictures?
I did not.
So there's all these female-related things that I missed, and you took pictures of none of them.
True.
I will say,
I'm not
though,
a keeper.
I think,
but I am. And so when I'm not there, I need you to step up to bat for me.
Your fiance was at a bachelorette party where I feel like she could have taken all the pictures for you.
There were some Asians in yoga pants there.
Crazy stuff happens at bachelorette parties.
They did, yeah. Like,
I wouldn't know.
That's because you're a boy.
That's true. Yeah.
There was, it was very stereotypical. Like, there was, like, one of the... Because my brother is marrying an Asian woman. So, you know, her family is all also Asian women.
Really?
And, like, of course, like, the smartphones were, like, Hello Kitty and stuff like that. And I'm like, live up to the stereotype.
Yep.
There was a girl there who was a big Doctor Who fan, and she says she doesn't like Donna Noble. So I wrote her off as a future relative. Because Donna's the best companion.
Well, speaking of the UFC, though, didn't we make you kind of a fan?
Well,
after the woman fight?
The woman fight. Well, what I liked about it was, so the men weren't quite so vicious.
Yeah.
But, like, when the women got in the ring, like, they were out for blood.
Yeah.
It was
they have lots
very
of
entertaining.
Well, they just finally got in the UFC, so they have to prove that
those
they're worth
hate each other.
Yeah.
They're,
well, women fighting is always amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Are they allowed to punch each other in the vagina?
One of them kicked the other one in the boobs so hard it threw her back.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like,
oh,
when the
yeah.
men were
keep
fighting.
Talking about that some more.
When the men were fighting, it was more tactical, like, I'm waiting for my moment to get in. And when the women were fighting, they're like, I just don't give a shit. I am going to attack this woman.
I'm just
so it was like an episode of Maury Povich. It was like, bitch, stay away from my man, and just came screaming forward.
Yeah. Kind of.
Were there any egg beaters involved?
There were no egg beaters involved.
No, but
wife beaters.
I will say, though, that most of the times that we've watched fights, like Jim and I, we watch a lot of the UFC and Strikeforce, and back in the day, the women fighting are really good. They're generally probably
oh, yeah.
most
girls
entertaining
were
like, at the
those girls were scary.
Yeah. But yeah, you haven't seen like a Chris Cyborg fight yet either. She's crazy.
She's a cyborg?
Yeah.
That's her name is Cyborg.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Archer's, I know they allowed MMAs in the, or cyborgs in the MMA. It's pretty awesome.
Yep.
So yeah, that was, it was a fun party.
I had a good time.
Katie's hungover this morning. Slash this afternoon. Slash
well,
this
everyone
evening.
Gave her alcohol. She had to drink all of it, too.
It's
there
true.
Was a lot
that
of
was
alcohol.
The rules.
Jim's theory is that what actually put her over the edge is after she'd been drinking quite a bit, she started sneaking drinks of his gin and lemonade.
He sat across from me. I feel like it was his own fault.
But what Jim is failing to take into account is she did two different shots throughout the evening. And this is the girl that's usually drunk after two beers. So, not sure it was the gin, per se.
I had three shots.
Three shots.
Because Jim didn't want his shot.
So that's right, so you drank his shot, too.
Yeah, of the Malibu Black.
Yeah, the Malibu Black. They had the requisite girls in skin-tight outfits giving away free booze. That was good times.
We got sunglasses. I'm
sure I know the answer to this, but...
No pictures.
Are there, fuck you all. Like, seriously.
Well, in my mind. Seared into my mind. Leather.
Also,
tight leather outfits.
I'm going to point out as well that in my visualization of this, since you said this place was called Legends, I'm visualizing the Legends of the Hidden Temple set.
No.
With Olmec and everything and all the temple guards, and this is where you people were drinking.
No. I thought you were going to say Legends of the Seeker.
No. That I know nothing
I
about. I did know Legend of the Hidden Temple, though.
It just has the Ric Shrine Flair of the as a bartender.
Woo! Woo!
But anyway.
I was going to bring up some pictures for you.
Of Ric Flair?
No, of the other other topics from yesterday, but then I decided...
I don't want them
on my phone.
No. At one point, the conversation went to the point where... if you
I
just
don't
add,
think people need to know where the conversation
right,
is.
No,
yeah,
no,
we don't.
No, I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah.
Email us, maybe we'll email you back. Terrible, terrible things.
Terrible things.
We'll
terrible.
Just send in pictures.
Apparently, we're all horrible people. But
well,
we had
duh.
Well, we knew that. We just... we're exploring the depth.
The level of our depravity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very low.
Yeah.
It involves tennis balls.
Well, that part wasn't even bad.
That wasn't the worst.
The dog rape stuff was fine.
The dog rape stuff was just
funny. It wasn't
until
we got past the dog raping where it really got bad.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just saying it went well below dog rape. That was like where we started.
Well, that's because...
and then it just went down.
The analogy that's been used before is that if conversations are like the surface of the ocean, and like correct conversation is in the sky, and then the surface of the ocean is right where you're at. Like, maybe we shouldn't be talking about this. We are submarines.
We're in the
and apparently
we're
yesterday,
in the Mariana's Trench.
Yesterday you plumbed all the way down into
we
the depths
into
of
those
the
fish.
You were
with the
Sequest DSV.
Yeah, like, we're Sequest.
Well,
DSV.
Here's what happened with the dogs.
Nope.
The talking
wait, wait,
dolphin.
Wait.
I don't want to know what happened with you. Said you were raping dogs, and that was the high point of the acceptability of your conversation. I don't want to know details.
Your deep sea.
Well, there was there was a barrel.
The planet corn.
Oh, yeah.
God.
We did go through the planet corn out the other side.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, go ahead, Katie. Sorry.
Poor dog.
Oh, I mean, it's a pretty innocent story. I mean, it at the end of the day,
now I do want to know. Do tell how you could get dog rape and innocent story to mesh. I want to see that Venn diagram.
Our buddy Ted has a dog named Waldo, and they're also babysitting their parents' dog, Maverick, and they came over to play with our dog, and they went to the park.
Malcolm.
And they went to the park, and they were chasing a tennis ball, and so Malcolm had a tennis ball in his mouth, and Maverick just went after Malcolm like there was no tomorrow.
Just as in humping him from behind. Katie's kind of being vague here, but Maverick's not fixed. And he decided, despite the fact that Maverick was at one time a boy, now that he's fixed, he's girl material.
Malcolm, you mean?
Yeah, Malcolm. Yeah.
Maverick decided to fix Malcolm.
Yeah. Must be a girl.
And
of course,
and
you
Malcolm's
got the tennis ball in his mouth, so it's like a ball gag.
Yeah,
it really did.
And then after a while, apparently, because I heard the story secondhand, Malcolm just drops the tennis ball and walks away.
That is true. That did happen. You're like, this just isn't worth it.
Yeah.
So, there was an innocent story of dogs. What dogs do.
Dog rapage.
I wasn't sure what part of it involved dogs, and it turns out it's both the giving and receiving.
Yes.
And that's the most innocent possible combination.
Yes, that is true.
We don't actually believe in bestiality.
It exists.
I mean...
Nathan Googles it all
like
the time.
It's like the Holocaust. It's real. You can't just not believe in it.
The Holocaust is not real, Brian.
Oh, oh my goodness.
That was a joke, by the way.
Is a joke? That is terrible.
All right.
Mutual comment.
Like pie. Yay.
Butterflies.
I will say, though, the rest of the conversation for the day was less rapey.
Not a lot less rapey.
Well, the Malcolm story with the poo was pretty funny. I mean, that was a great story.
That was not a great story.
I forgot to bring that up with you're talking about like knocking over the bucket a couple of times.
Entire bucket of poo.
I forgot to bring that because the lady who runs your doggy daycare came in to print some more stuff at my work, and I forgot to ask her about the Malcolm poo incident. Malcolm
they were the on Channel 3 the News.
They were on Channel 3 News.
It's true.
Your dogs,
your dog
barely
eating poos on the Channel 3 News.
This dog ate four barrels of poo.
No,
live on News 3.
Doggy daycare.
I love that your dog like knocked over the garbage can, ate poo, and then they like cleaned it up, and he did it a second time. Like, he's so persistent to get it.
Well, that was
poo.
The way they described it was he was very persistent. That was the exact phrasing they used. I was like, after he gets into the bucket the first time, you know what I do? Put the bucket somewhere he can't get at it.
Weren't you talking about he was doing something in the backyard?
Oh yeah, wandering around the backyard eating little piles of rabbit poop.
Yeah.
Well,
it's like popcorn.
It was.
I like
candy.
Jim's description. He's just a furry little biodome.
Yeah, he is a furry little biodome.
Ecosystem. He's just cleaning up.
And he jumps up on the couch and gives you kisses.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Disturbing thought on so many levels.
Anywho.
I feel like we should move somewhere
in short, the freebooter's awful. Have I mentioned that? And if you like it, you're wrong and stop listening. I have a thing in front of me that's opened to scenarios.
We were gonna.
Does
we
Brian
mentioned this
one?
A while ago. I can look at Nathan's.
Okay. Yeah, you can.
We were gonna. One of our ideas. Well, a very common podcast idea is to kind of talk about SteamRoller 2013 in more detail. And we were gonna talk about in the booklet scenarios 3 and 4, which is close quarters and ammunition run. Both of these are categorized as the assault scenarios because there are 6 categories. We're skipping to 3 and 4 because, you know, why not, you know. We're just going to kind of jump around.
Jump around.
Some podcast
hip-hop,
may have done 1 and 2
and get
already.
Down.
Which they'll do 3 and 4 this
jump,
week.
I'm sure they will.
Jump.
I guess I'll just bring up, so scenario 3,
Chris
close
Cross
quarters.
Jump.
It has the artifice kill box, which over half the scenarios have. So you're casting.
Which is good.
Is it over half this year?
I think it's half
I
the scenarios
counted.
Have.
We'll take 30 seconds.
All right.
You talk about other things.
Of course, kill box in this version, your caster has to be, you know, 14 inches up the... You have to be at least touching or within 14 inches of the...
I believe the exact phrasing is not completely within 14
correct.
Inches.
Of the zone.
5 of the 12 have kill box.
5 okay. of the 12. That was pretty complicated math.
Yeah,
so
I had
it's
to count
basically
to 5.
In 2012, it was 2 circular zones that you had to control. Now it's actually 2 flags that are 21 inches forward, 18 inches from the side.
Which flags are an inch and a half across, and then they're 4 inches out, so that becomes a 9.5-inch across zone of control, essentially, which I think there were 9-inch zones when they were actual zones.
They were eight before, but they're just slightly bigger flags. Now. Is you're not allowed, and this is...
You have to be base-to-base to control them, but contesting zones
right,
are before.
But this may be something that I misunderstood, but this was my understanding of how it worked. Is you're not allowed to pre-measure if you're contesting a flag.
You cannot pre-measure that.
Yeah. So there is some shenaniganness with flags where it's like, I might need to get it, like with a zone, you can be like, I am exactly towed into that zone. Exactly towing in to contest a flag is much trickier.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's very true. Also, to control it, for units, it's a pain because have to have over 50%. You have to have one model base to base, and the rest have to be all within that 4 inches. For a solo or a caster or a jack, it's not as big of a deal because it's just one model being base to base. But in this scenario, it's like all the scenarios. Which one of the things that I personally love is it goes to five scenario points. If you dominate your friendly flag, you get one control point, which kind of means your caster is in a very specific spot on the board.
Yeah,
which is interesting. And then for the enemy flag, if you can control it with any of their own control rules, you get 2 points. And if somehow your caster's over there having a field day, you get 3 points.
Question: to dominate it with your caster, does your caster have to be base to base?
Yes,
your caster has to be base.
Flags are base to base. Objectives are 2 inches.
Yeah,
which a lot of people forget and mix those two up. It's a very common question.
In timed, I like the scenario. I found it's been an impact in every game I've played, especially time games, because what'll happen is someone will, especially the person at the bottom of two, will start to get that dominate his point on the bottom of two, so he gets that 1 point.
It does maximize at a 3-point turn, which is fairly a lot of the scenarios let you have a big turn where you can score 3 points, which is the most you can score on this one as well.
Yep, which is interesting. So really, I don't, and this one, you know, in a timed game, I can easily see, you know, you can set the pace because someone's going to be going back and forth. Also, even in a death clock, I haven't run into any problems where someone hasn't been able to win by scenario. Because even if you score that 1 or 2 points early, you can kind of push the tempo, kind of push it to your opponent to overrun it.
And the fact that you have to be so close with your caster means if you are both scoring, you are right in each other's grill.
Yep. You are definitely, this is an aggressive scenario.
Well, if you can do the control really the good. Enemy flag for two, that one your caster doesn't have to be anywhere. Right. I mean, it is kill box, so they're still going to be up a little bit.
Because it seems like you just get a caster kill if you're both trying to dominate. You know what I mean?
If you're each dominating your own flag, your casters are like a foot away from each other, which somebody's dying.
Yeah.
Unless it's like Terminus and Butcher staring at each other. Neither of them can kill the other one.
They're both exactly out of range of each other's threat range.
Well, I meant like they're both armor 50.
Or the giant colossal in between them. It's kind of hard to get to them.
Just a big meat grinder. Yeah. But if that's the case, stuff's going to be contested anyway.
Yeah. It's an interesting scenario. I thought that close quarters in 2012 was very, very difficult to score even 1 point for the tiebreak. And I think that's not true with this in 2013.
Which is weird because it's a larger area to contest now.
Yeah, and you have to be closer up to score it. But the way it felt in 2012 was part of it is you can score something on your half of the board now.
That is true.
It is possible.
That's a valid point.
And all the 2013 ones, I've felt that it's easier to just score points in general. Whereas before it was like, oh man, I got a control point at least if you lost the game. Now it's like, well, of course you got a control point. If you didn't, you're doing it wrong.
Valid point.
But it's not a very complicated scenario.
No, it's nice. I mean, I would use... I mean, if I had two lists, I would definitely feel fine unless using either one, either an infantry swarm attrition list, or obviously a jam list would work well. This is very legitimate for a scenario, a lockdown caster. I mean, even a lockdown caster won't guarantee you an auto win, but it'll definitely be a pretty aggressive play, especially...
Well, because even if you lock them down, you're only going to be scoring probably 2 points. I mean, the only way you can score 3 points is if you get your caster way up there, which none of the lockdown casters like to do.
E. Kruger might be the exception.
It's still pretty far forward. I mean, in this scenario...
It is far forward.
If you're going for that dominate your opponent zone, you're really putting a lot into that, the hope you win really fast.
Yeah. I mean, controlling their zone and dominating your own is the safer way to get 3 points.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, is Kruger could probably
Kruger could, like Gorton could, you know, but most of the other, like, control casters are super fragile.
Yep.
And if they're that far forward, they're going to die.
Yeah, E. Haley, you don't want E. Haley facing either of these flags, unless your opponent just decided to not come out of their deployment zone.
Right.
I definitely feel it's a good scenario where you definitely want to, I would want to go first. I mean, I wouldn't be upset if I went second with some list, but I definitely would like the ability to control that middle as fast as possible.
Yep.
Well, I guess it's a side topic, but I remember when we played a few weeks ago, you said that Crix just in general likes to go first.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't like people. I mean, I always have a plan when I'm playing my scoring to go first or second. Some lists I'm going to go second. But, like, there's a certain armies where it's a whole different topic. But, I mean, there's certain armies where if you're fighting against Crix, you never want them to go first. It's just a... And there's also certain other types of lists where you just don't want them to have that kind of run.
Yeah.
Especially, like, some of my lists where if I'm playing Iskar Theme Force and I got 20, you know, five models that are all AD that are going to be, you know, just wherever I want them to be.
Any jam list, letting that jam list, like a hard jam list going first sucks.
Hard.
Yeah. You like that? Penis. So you guys have played more 2013 tournaments than I have. I know in 2012, Close Quarters was one of those you saw at every tournament. Has that been your experience in 2013?
I've seen it less, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't know. The tournaments I've run, I've been rolling completely random. So.
Which people didn't do in 2012 because it was such a pain. You wanted to pick ones that had the same size zones. And now you really can just roll it completely random. With the exception of the one, which we're not covering tonight, but the one that requires four objectives per table. That one's a little bit of a pain.
Destruction, yeah.
Well, it's harder for a bigger tournament.
Yeah. Anything else we're
no.
digging out of three, or should we?
No, there's not a lot of, really. It's two flags.
Yeah.
Score them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very generic, very straightforward scenario, very aggressive.
The other one, though, scenario four is the more complicated of the assault scenarios, the ammunition run.
Yep.
Because the big thing about it is that it's got a central zone, and it's got an objective dead center in the zone, and then you each have your own objective. And when you dominate an objective, it's nice. You get plus one range to your guys that are near the objective, so that's handy. But the big thing is that people forget, and there's a lot of scenarios where this is the case, is that objective in the middle of the zone is an enemy model, which means you cannot control that zone until you kill it. So there is a mandatory first step, which is killing that guy, and whoever kills it gets a point before
and
you
kill
can
it,
even start.
You clear a decent chunk of the zone.
Yeah, because they're explosive, aren't they?
Yup.
Yeah. So
pile 12, fire continuous.
You kill it, it blows up, kills a bunch of stuff, and then you can start scoring the zone.
Yeah.
So you have to kill it. Are you most likely want to kill it from range?
If right? at all possible.
Yeah, or just throw in a couple expendable guys.
And it, like all objectives, it cannot be attacked until the bottom of turn two.
Can right. you, can you, if you had, for example, druids, can you pull it? Or push it?
It's
they're all being errated. No, they're going to
they're going to change them
the wording
also
here.
What
doesn't stop that? But the I think it's even in the PvP
yeah,
thing.
Like
it's there,
the I forget the name of it. The scenario, the Valor scenario. I forget
the one where if
the
it's
one
in
that
your
used to be Gaidon's.
So
I'm
way.
Just blanking on its name. Rally Point.
Yeah,
that has the effigy of Valor thing. Those guys move because that's the entire purpose of that scenario. But all the other ones, I believe, are going to not be able to teleport, pull, push, any of that stuff.
Yeah, they're there till they die. Yeah.
Like, currently, by rules, you can. I don't think you should get used to that.
No. Cause
right. Well, yeah. We've been playing that you... I know for a fact we've been playing that you can't teleport
yeah.
them with your stones.
I think the last event... I know the event we're going to next week, they're going to be using the beta rules where you can't move them under any...
Right.
Because, I mean, if it's going to be the way it's going to be officially in a
yeah.
few weeks, we're adjusting to that now.
Right.
Yeah. And you there are some of these scenarios where if you could TK them, that'd be really powerful. So,
well, like destruction, you just go TK
yep.
TK, and then you can score without having to kill your opponent's things,
yep.
which is the entire purpose of the event of
yeah,
the scenario.
Yeah, it breaks destruction right in half.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that broke destruction in half that's also being baited away is in destruction they're going to be immune to continuous effects because the issue in destruction was you'd start your turn with one of your guys corroded.
Yeah.
You'd fail to expire the corrosion. Your objective would take a point of damage. Your opponent's objectives become invincible.
Yeah. Yeah. If you could put any kind of dot on the opponent's objectives, they can't kill yours.
Yeah. So that was an oops.
Yeah.
So they fixed that.
It's funny that slipped through beta testing and no one caught it, but I guess...
It's just a weird... Yeah. I don't know. Just nobody noticed.
No. I know I didn't. So yeah. But this one is more... excuse me. More interesting. I don't know...
This one you can score four in a turn.
No kill box either.
No kill box, but you can four score this one.
If you clear both of the
you
enemy
kill
ones
both enemy,
and control.
You kill the center one and their personal one, and then yeah. dominate the center, you can get yeah. four.
It seems like shooting... Well, this might be why shooting is going up, but it seems like having a ranged game in this particular scenario seems better.
Yeah, because these guys are only armor 15.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, like, even, like, POW 10s are going to, you know, get it done.
Yep.
You shoot it with a unit of POW 12s, it's not surviving.
Yeah, no, my unit of Victor's takes it right off the table.
Yeah.
It should be noted is that the point in the center is enemy to you, so therefore you can't control that zone.
Right, yeah.
Because that's what happened to me.
Right.
Oh, this is the one that you did that on?
Yeah.
I talked about that a minute ago, but you were browsing Amazon, so you didn't hear it.
I was looking at new mixers.
I know you're looking at new mixers, which was confusing because like a half hour ago I looked over the computer and you were looking at like blenders and stuff because I think you must have just typed in mixer typed in the search mixer, and the machine's just like, oh, he wants to mix some batter.
Or egg beaters.
Yeah. I was horrified while he was looking up egg beaters because you keep mentioning it yesterday. But.
Now, one thing I am a little bit confused on is this tactical tip, only active player scores when multiple players dominate the same zone, flag, or objective.
And that's on, like, all of them.
Well, yeah. I assumed you wouldn't be able to dominate if somebody was contesting.
But you can't contest with a Warcaster anymore.
Oh.
So if a zone only has two Warcasters in it,
the active
neither of you
scores.
Is contesting each other, and so people are like, well, do we both score? And so the tactical tip is that only the person who's turned it is scores if you're both.
And really,
it literally only comes up if the only things in a zone are Warcasters.
Yeah, the tactical tip is, boy, we both lost our army. Isn't this exciting as we take turns scoring?
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
It avoids those scores that are like 20-20.
Yeah.
Because no one can kill each other's casters. So
yeah,
the game will never end.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of hilarious.
It should be noted, I think, for Steamroller, though, too, they only count up this... count up to 5 points.
They count up to infinity, but then when you record it on your sheet, you drop it to five.
You get credit for five. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. Yeah, that way, because some people apparently like to do events where instead of strength of schedule, you do control points.
Yeah.
And so what you could do is, like, if you and I played a game, and we're like, hey, you know what? You beat me. Good job. But hold on a second.
How about we both score,
score every single turn so that I can get second, because I'm going to have a bajillion control points.
Yeah.
I've actually ended games legitimately 7 points to six, though, because I mean you can end games just because the way this you have those 3 or 4 point turns.
Yeah.
So I mean I think it's good to cap it at five even.
And what is worth noting though with the dual dominate thing, you can't just both sit there and score points forever because since you take turn scoring,
Someone
of you is going to break through. Yeah.
Correct.
It isn't like, you know, if you're both scoring your own flag and you score the same amount every turn, like if you each have one of the flags in incursion or something.
And the other thing with this one that's worth noting is this is one of the ones where you can't score on your own side of the table. You get a point for blowing up their objective, but you can't camp your caster on your objective and score.
Well, the objectives are worth nothing as far as...
The objectives are functionally not scored.
They're only scorable by killing both your own and the opponent.
It seems like you would just want to abandon your own objective because you can't protect it, and if you're standing next to it, you're going to take damage. So you might as well just be like, well... going over this way.
So it could be hilarious to like put occultation on it or something.
Well,
keep it alive. I mean, all of your guys within 2 inches of like a plus one range while you're dominating it, which is nothing to be... I don't think that's the right facial expression, Jeremy.
I just think
huge.
Where they are, you don't care about that extra
that's
one inch
of
range.
If you, well, this one doesn't have kill box.
That's true.
And so like where it is, it's 20 inches up the table, and so that means it's... 28 inches to your opponent's table edge, it can be an issue.
Some Kator mortars would like that a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
a lot of ranged jacks, and the ranged jacks aren't really going to care that much when it does explode, so you can just make hay while the sun shines.
And sometimes you might, I might have a Kriya within 2 inches of it, but on the other side of 2 inches is my caster, so I could have, you know, still have people moving around. It might occasionally get buffs to make it harder to kill.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's always funny when you have
getting
random.
Plus one range by putting my caster next to something that's going to explode and light them on fire.
War
Machine is not something I'm excited
about. Potentially not a good thing, but...
Because by definition, my caster will...
But you'll know...
Again, I said if you can protect it.
Yeah. And like, you'll know what you're facing, too. If your opponent army is all guns, you're probably not going to do that. But, you know, there are a lot of lists where you're like, oh, my opponent has no guns, so...
So just put a screening force and yay!
Yeah.
It's situational, obviously. Yeah. It's definitely not something you're going to do every...
You cannot, in a vacuum right now, say yes, it's correct, or no, it's incorrect to always do it or not do it.
But I'm not designing a list to take advantage of it. I'll put it that way.
Although, if you can take advantage of it, do so. I mean, it's just a nice little thing to have on there.
I really like the exploding objectives because it does give some threat to your opponent. As a 15-15, you are going to have to put some force into killing it, but you're going to kill, like, if your opponent's not careful about where they put their army, those activations may have been worth it, even just in attrition, never mind the scenario point you get.
Yeah. And, you know, the points, like, I won this one on scenario at a previous event. I actually ended it with 6 points because I scored the 4 and then scored the 2.
Yep.
But I just said it's worth it, and I charged both of them with a unit of Kayazi. My Kayazi all died, but it scored me 4 points that turn. I actually scored the 2 on my opponent's turn because I just they killed those 2. Gorton charged up their feeted, pushed my opponent a mile away, and then he was speed debuffed and couldn't get in. So it's fun to win scenario on your opponent's turn.
That was very mean.
It was mean.
But your opponent never is really happy with that.
No, they aren't happy.
Or I love when you, I love when they like they're doing their turn, and they're killing all your models, and like, oh yeah, there was a scenario zone I was supposed to get into.
Yeah,
like they could have the whole turn. They kind of forgot about it because
during their
you.
Turn, like that'll happen. Like it'll be, I mean, not the time when it literally has me win on their turn, but like I'll have people, you know, I'll do like it's to five, and like I'll score two and feed them, push them away, and then they'll just like dick around and go in circles and kill a couple things, and then I'll score two on their turn, and I'm like. Why didn't you get into the zone?
I think it's because they don't practice with scenarios when they're doing casual play, and so they forget that that's a thing.
And you can bait people. Like if I think my opponent will do that, I'll throw my death strike right in their face. I'll throw it away. Go ahead and kill them. You'll feel good about killing them, and I'll score those 2 points, and I'll feel better about those 2 points I just got.
About the way I won?
Yeah, exactly.
You killed the death jack, I won. We're both happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I killed the death jack, though.
Yeah, that's true. We're all winners then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's an ammunition run in a nutshell.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, I think I would play my Mozart list against this one because it has more shooting. And then my Kruger list with this one.
I don't know. This one's super winnable on scenario. I think Kruger is going to be really scary in that scenario.
Well, I just... But Mozart has more... I don't know. I don't know.
Fascinating.
First impressions, that's what I'd do.
Moving on.
Moving on.
So, Katie, your turn.
So, I was on the forums the other day, and somebody asked the question, like, what do you guys do to prep for tournaments? Because, and I think what he was actually getting at was how do people avoid choking at tournaments, which I think is really probably how he should have worded the question. And so, I did a little bit of research on choking, because I choke all the time.
Wow. Nope.
No one's
neutral
taking
comment. Yeah. Neutral comment.
Well, like, that's the way I've been my entire life. Like, I play...
You've always been into choking. All right, I've always been like, we tried.
Yeah. We gave you one freebie, but yeah.
But, like, I usually play up to my opponent's ability, but then I'll get overexcited or... I don't know how to make this better. Like, I just don't.
No, carry on. This is funny.
And, like, I just do something that's stupid or that I should have known not to do or... At some point, make an error that's below my ability to play. And so this is what I found. And then we'll open up for you guys' opinions. One is that it's because
you... Jeremy, stop watching Iron Man. Sorry. We're podcasting in here.
I know.
Damn it, Jeremy.
I wasn't distracting you.
Derailed.
One is... So one of the problems is when you are used to thinking a lot, so smarter person, they use more working memory, and that's also the part. You probably read this on Cracked.
Yes, I was like, you segued away into a new thing, yes.
They use more working memory.
Although when I read that, I also thought of, oh, that's War Machine.
Yeah, and so they're also more likely to get stressed because it's the same part of the brain. And one of the articles I found that's how do you address that is you play in situations where you're stressed out. Maybe not to the same level, but what the hell? but your brain gets used to handling stress at the same time where it's trying to think. And so the only thing I can think of that you would be in the same kind of stressful situation, because in casual games, like at the end of the day, you're there to learn, you're not there to win, right? Is to put something that makes you think that winning is important or more important than you otherwise would. So... But, like, not so important that you lose while you're there for a casual game.
So, like, put a buck on it?
So, like, put a buck. Or, like, for us, we have a yogurt place right next to it. So, like, whoever wins has to buy the other person, or gets a free yogurt. The other person has to buy me. So, that way, there's something there that stresses your brain out a little bit. Like, oh, man, I need to win this. But it's
yogurt's a buck 05. You're getting into high stakes now.
So, I am.
The loser gets diabetes.
They have sugar-free fro-yo.
But, like, yeah. Like, it's a legitimate question. How do you practice in a stressed-out situation without losing the it's casual play, so we're not going to sit here and be dicks to each other?
Well, you could play a game and be like, we could just start yelling at you the entire game, just calling you bad names for, like, an hour while you're trying to do your turn.
A lot of people claim to do it the other way. They're like, well, just don't get stressed out at the event. But it's like, that's really easier said than done.
Right.
Like, well, that's not possible.
And then another article I found said that they had people meditate which sounds like really new age, for 10 minutes. So they tested two groups of people, and they tested about the same. And then they taught half of the group how to meditate, and then for the other group, and then they retested them, and then the group that meditated for 10 minutes before taking the test scored an average of a B+, and then the other group scored an average of a B-, which isn't that big of a difference, but if you're playing somebody who's got the same skill level as you, it's enough to beat them. If you struggle with getting stressed out or making stupid decisions that you otherwise wouldn't make.
Is meditate replaceable with masturbate?
I mean,
I do that for 10 minutes before every event or during my tournament event.
Before every game.
It's really during the game. It's like, oh, wait, I forgot. During your turn, I got to take care of something.
It's just one of your death clock moves.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
You do death clock. I'll be right. Give me 35 seconds.
I mean, I don't know because I don't know anything about meditating. I've never done it before.
Like, or masturbating? Is that what you're saying?
She did not claim that.
I know.
I thought that we were off that topic.
We're never off that topic.
But yeah, I mean, like, what do you guys do to avoid or to handle the stress? Because there have been situations where, like, I've been sitting at a table in a tournament and it's like, I am definitely going to win this game because you just made a massive mistake. And then I, like, didn't think through something or I got overly excited and just didn't think things through. Like, I choked, mm-hmm. basically, where I should have.
My main thing is that, like, I get super excited to go to events because they're social and fun and I'm excited just to hang out with people. And then I go there and I'm super confident and then I lose my first game because I did something retarded and then I hate myself and then I'm in the scrub bracket.
Losing round one.
That's my standard
sucks.
Path. Well, it's not the answer you're looking for, though.
No, it's not because, right, because after
you want to know how to avoid that.
Because after you're in the scrub bracket, it doesn't matter anymore. All the pressure's gone.
Right.
True.
It's not really the scrub bracket.
I mean, no, it's the scrub bracket.
No.
The non-winning bracket. Yeah. Like, you're not going to win
Let's
after
just
that.
Call, it's called the losing bracket for a reason.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, at the end of the day...
The shame squad.
If you go into the bracket where you lost the first game, sure, you could theoretically strength the schedule third place, maybe, but you're basically out of it.
Those are the most stressful. I mean, honestly, when I've lost round one here and there, it's the rest of the day. I'm like, okay,
bro. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like, just a relaxing day at that point because there's no more pressure.
Take off my pants, play the rest of the game, just kind of chill out.
So one thing, and I thought about this when you talked about this. I'd forgotten you talked about this, but then I remembered that you talked about this the other day was I find it stressful, especially at a tournament when you're one of the last games to finish up and there's like 45 people watching your game. And I find that I get a similar amount of stress if I'm just playing a game at a casual night and there's even just one or two people watching the game. It ratchets up the level of the game for me. Not because they're making comments, not because they're distracting me, just like someone besides my opponent is watching the game, all crap.
Right, well, because they're going to see things that you might not have, and then you feel embarrassed. So maybe as opposed to getting yogurt, although I like the yogurt idea.
The yogurt idea is fun.
just have people watch your game.
So you could stare at his game, giving him that pressure of being watched and judged, and then he can pay you with yogurt, and it's win-win.
No, because I want several yogurts if I have to watch an entire game.
She's not really enjoying watching the games in general.
You basically don't want to play War Machine. You just want to go out for yogurt.
That's why we go on Wednesdays.
Yeah. Yeah.
I found that for the longest time, when people watched my game, I hated it so much. I'm like, go fuck yourself and leave me alone. Like, I'm trying to play, you know, my game against whoever. How dare you try to watch my game, you son of a bitch. And I'm like, then I realized one day, it doesn't matter. Now, I will tell you, it took me, what, 15 years to get to that point? So and some people get to it right away. I mean, but now, I mean, even when if I'm in a tournament, like if someone's watching my game, as long as they're not interacting with saying, oh, you know, as long as they're not like doing something rude or annoying, I really don't care who's watching it. And I will say, if there's like, and then it's helpful in some ways. If there's more than like three people watching this game, why aren't they playing the game? I better see what time it is. Oh crap! I only have this. You know, the round's about to be over.
Yeah.
But it honestly just took me a long time of having people watch my game. And it was really kind of just, you know, because I used to complain to have people like, you know, I'm like, go away. You know, go away baiting, go away playing a game. Yeah. And eventually I'm like, you know, just, and I stop. And eventually I'm like, you know what, I'm not going to tell them to go away. And I just had them kind of hover there. And then at some point I just didn't notice them anymore. Yeah. So it's just, for me, it was just a matter of time adapting to them watching. And now I could care less.
But something else more on point as far as the choking and the making major mistakes from the stress and everything is during your casual games, make sure you practice with time, with the clock. And the reason why is not just to get used to it, but because to help with the advice I'm actually about to give, which is you need to take your how methodical you are and ratcheted that up to 11 at tournaments. That's what always costs me games, is I forget one stupid, stupid little thing. I forget to allocate my focus. I forget to have Rupert pipe Pathfinder before I announce the charge with my Chaotseeds or something like that. Like, you need to make sure that you are so methodical with your order of operations, with your spells, with your abilities, that you do things in the correct order, because that's where 90% of your game losing mistakes are going to happen. It's like, oh, right, I forgot to put puppet strings on before I went for the assassination run, and now I just rolled snake eyes, or something like that. So if you can just slow down just a touch, like, don't get hyper, like, oh my god, I'm on the clock, it's a tournament game, there's a death clock there, and it's time rounds, I got to go fast, 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 fast. If you can just slow down, take a deep breath, and go, okay, what is the turn order? What's my order of operations? And I need to make sure I go through in order and I don't skip a step, because that's what's going to fuck you.
You could literally take a little notepad with you, keep it on the side, and just write down, you know, I'm going to do this, this, and this.
Or you take a marker and write on the back of your hand.
You could do it. Wasn't too, but what I'm saying, though, is, I mean, if once you start writing that down, it will become second nature.
That does help.
It wasn't at an event, but I mean, you could, but there was, when I was learning a particular troll list when I played them, my turns, I kept screwing up the order of operations, because it was stuff like, you know, it was with Bork, and I, like, the keg bearer top up and cast this spell and do that spell and do the fell caller and then do the chronicler and all these things, and I literally wrote down the default order of operations one step per card, and I would just put it on the table, and I would flip the top one over and then flip the next one over and then flip the next one over and do them all, and then when I was done with my turn, I took the stack and flipped it back over. And so I was always doing every single thing in order. It was the dumbest thing. It looked idiotic, but sure learned that order of operations.
And especially
because
the
unless cards stuck together, I wasn't skipping that fell card, because I'd flip over the chronicler, putting on the you know, you kill me, I fall down, and I'd flip that card over, and they would say, give them +2, and it's like, oh, yes, and then I'd flip that over, and it'd be, do this, and okay, and I'd flip it over, and so on.
And especially, one thing, a part of being mentally prepared is if you practice a lot, and you know your list, and practice when you're playing those games, even if you get a little stressed out, your list plays like second nature, so there's a little bit less stress, because you don't want the stress of what does my army do. That's like an unnecessary stress in a tournament scenario. You need to know your army. I do agree. Before games, I definitely try to take a second and just kind of clear. I mean, I don't meditate or anything, but I definitely take a couple seconds and I just kind of sit there, zone out on what I'm going to do, and then before the game, spend like a couple seconds or a minute or whatever, and then just kind of clear my head and then prepare myself for battle.
I will mention card 6 was just feet with a question mark. That's another thing that we've all lost games because we've skipped card 6.
Yeah.
We've skipped that one.
I remember the first Mayhem I went to, Andy was playing a game. And the game went about 3 turns longer than it should have because Andy was like in a situation where if he feats, he wins. And Andy didn't feat. And then like there's a bunch of people watching, and then the other guy dirtles around a little bit, and then it comes to Andy's turn, and Andy didn't feat again. So that third turn, Andy gets his marker and writes in big letters on his hand, feat! And he goes to reach for his dice, and he goes, wait, I feat.
That might or might not have happened.
Another mental problem, a thing people have to be prepared for, is if you're playing an opponent, and let's say you're on your mental game and your opponent's not, because you have opponents who will start breaking down, try not to... If you're gonna,
don't pity them.
Yeah, if you. Because if you're like, I mean,
that
oh,
sounds
my,
mean,
my,
but that's kind of the point.
Oh, my opponent's
to, right?
doing bad, so I'm going to let up. Then you can. I mean, a casual game I can understand, but it's just if it's a you're not doing them any favors because you're not helping them learn anything. But it's like trying to still play strong. What I usually do is I take it up. I just take it up a notch. My opponent get little. They get a little. They're breaking down mentally. They're getting pissy. I'll just try to kill them faster. I don't try to get too. But then they get too sloppy to end the game faster because they're having a worse time. Then you get sloppy. Then you throw the game away.
Right.
So it's a really good.
That's, again, methodical.
That's the worst feeling in the world is when you're in that driver's seat. You're in control, and then you just make something just absolutely stupid, and they just win the game. And all they were doing the whole time is going whole time, and it's. Anyway,
one thing that the Muse guys talked about like last year sometime that I thought was really good advice for some people, I don't think this is right for everybody, for some people, is if you're going to a tournament where it's standard, 7-minute turns for 50 points, play your casual games with 5-minute turns for yourself. And then when you get to the tournament, it's going to be like, oh man, I have this extra time, I'm like less stressed. As opposed to you play a casual game with no time, and then you go in for 7 minutes, and you're like, shit. I can't think of anything this fast.
It's not a terrible idea. I remember last year it was big. We did a lot of 10-minute events or 12-minute events. Whenever I would play those 10-minute events, it was fine. I played those 12-minute events. I'm like, I got like 4 hours. I mean, it felt like 4 hours per turn with that extra couple of minutes. So
it's amazing how long 2 minutes can feel. Well, I've been telling the ladies that for a long time.
Well, and it's just like, I mean, in baseball, you don't stand there like in the batter's circle swinging a really light bat and then go out there with a heavy one. You put like a bunch of extra weights on the bat so that when you actually get up there to try to hit that fastball, you're swinging that bat faster than you think you need to, not slower.
I think I've ever participated in a sporting event in my life.
I used to play baseball.
Can you make a metaphor that's video game related so I can actually understand?
Probably,
like,
but it'll take
me. Playing Portal.
Yeah.
And you're trying to beat 50 seconds or whatever. Mm-hmm. You told me that somebody beat it in, and then you're showing it to Jeremy, and you're like, oh, I have a lot of time to show this to Jeremy because I have to go slowly so he can see what I'm doing.
Speed running. Like the 4-minute Morrowind and whatnot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Way to tie that together, babe. Good job.
Yeah, thanks. Good job.
Anywho.
That was a good corner. I liked it.
Yeah, and honestly, it just takes a long, it can take a long time to get mentally prepared, especially when you start getting into the winning bracket a lot, and you're like,
I wouldn't know.
Especially after like a six, when you're in like a 5-round event or a 6-round event, and you're like, you know, you're exhausted because you've been playing War Machine for like 10 hours, and now you have one more game, and now because it's the finals, you are going to have people watching you. So you by default have people watching you from the very beginning to the end, and your opponent, you know, is good because you're the last 200 feet of people after, you know, a huge event. So then you're just trying to, you just gotta
see. I usually tell myself my opponent can't be that good because I'm also undefeated and I suck. So maybe they also limped in.
Well, but like seriously,
maybe that's a little self-deprecating. But that's what usually keeps me calm. Is like every time, like my opponent. I mean, I'm here, so they can't be that good.
And, unless you're a complete savant, the fact is you're not going to roll into your first tournament and win. And the fact of the matter is, you're going to be more stressed the first few tournaments you go to. So it's just like we've talked about before. If your first game is at a tournament, great. You know what? Get that out of the way. Go in, lose some games, learn about some casters, have some fun doing it. Don't stress about whether you win the tournament or not. Waiting and putting off your first tournament experience until you are the master of the casual game, you're not actually doing yourself that many favors at the end of the day.
Never go to an event with the expectation you're going to win the event. That's a terrible thing to do.
Or with the goal of winning the event. Like when I go to War Machine Weekend, it isn't to win an event at War Machine Weekend. It's to hang out with people that are awesome and get drunk. Yeah. Like, who cares?
My
goal
was to win at least one game at War Machine Weekend.
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, I play hard. And, you know, I do win a lot of local events, but I still go there to, you know, have some fun. I want to play my game at my level, and if things happen to roll well that day, where you know I happen to get that lucky break and win, whatever. But I go to, if I play at my performance level that I feel I should be at, that's what I want. I mean, the only time I get upset in a tournament now is when I go and I play bad, or then I get mentally broken down, and it just sucks. But just don't set ridiculous expectations because you're going to mentally fall apart that much faster.
It's true.
Relax. Don't panic. Play methodical. That's it.
Relax.
Meditate if you're a damn hippie.
Yeah.
I
or masturbate. Either one of those.
Well, either way, I think it's supposed to just clear your mind.
Yeah.
So if that's what works for you, then...
Problem solved.
Problem solved.
Just tell everyone you were... not masturbating in the bathroom. I don't know.
I was not.
Just to make sure to tell everybody, hey guys, I totally wasn't masturbating just now.
Don't even worry about it.
Just, you know, I know nobody asked, but I wasn't masturbating.
I'm still not masturbating right now.
How you doing?
Well, here's the thing, though. If you did say that to something like your opponent, then that's probably what they'll be thinking about.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I try to always imagine my opponent masturbating, so that wouldn't work against me.
You want to get them to imagine you masturbating.
Yeah, I do.
Every time you move one of your models, just make a noise.
When I play against Jeremy, I'm just bring up egg beaters the entire game, and it'll send him a little discouragement.
Hyperion with two double egg beaters. Each fist.
I do like that back in the day when we were going to buy a big floppy 14-inch dildo for Keith to use to measure Gatsby's control area. Just make sure it's exactly 14 so you can just sweep it across the table.
Why does it have to be floppy? Shouldn't it be hard? Right?
No. If you've seen Idiocracy and you've seen the purple dong flapping on the hood of the car in the Demolition Derby, that is the height of humor right there.
That's rehabilitation.
That's...
not. Demolition Derby.
Yeah.
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 Moving on.
All right, then. So there we go. We somehow, I forgot we were even talking about there. We just got to dildos. So
natural
recommendation.
Progression.
Brian, you're all excited because you've douched out of actually doing this the last couple of episodes.
It's been amazing.
So, yes.
And my recommendation is even War Machine related. I decided to just,
wow.
I know. Well, I haven't had a War Machine related. I'm saving up my game and movie related ones, you know.
Okay.
For a day that's relevant. I could bring up games that are like 12 years old I'm playing, but that doesn't seem too current. My recommendation is that no matter what faction you're playing, you should look at your list, look in your closet, look what unit haven't I played in the last 12 months, take that unit out or that caster out and just play them a couple times. People have a bad habit of saying, that one unit sucked because I played them at 3 games 3 years ago and now I hate them. And maybe that unit, maybe there's a reason it's not that good, but I think people need to reevaluate some models and units of the game, and people need to kind of shake up what they're doing. Especially just, I mean, it's just a thing people need to do. People get too close-minded and say, well, only these 5 models are good. No, just take that random unit, throw them with some casters, and don't just play like one game and say, oh, he sucked, because maybe it was a bad matchup. Try him a couple times, and maybe you still won't like him, but maybe like, hey, I have a whole new appreciation of, you know, whatever X unit it is, you know.
And if you still don't like them, maybe it'll open your eyes to more reasons why you don't like them, which will remind you of reasons you do like other units.
Yeah, I mean, obviously don't use the freebooter because that's wrong.
Hey,
but
say this. Every single list I have ever built, I have fielded every freebooter I own in it. First thing I do is like, bam, every freebooter I own is in this list. Now what?
You're being funny. But yeah, no, but just, I mean, everyone has a couple of units. Like, I don't put the Revenant Pirates on the table that often or the Drudges on the table that often, and I think I'm going to bring them out again a little bit. I mean,
a little Drudge action?
Yeah, a little Drudge or a little Revenant Pirate. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in them, but I'm going to try them with a few different casters and see how things go.
If Mechanithralls didn't exist, Drudges would be fine.
That's probably true.
I mean, just stop being a lemming, I guess. I guess that's probably a good way is stop following what everybody else is following on the internet and build your own identity with your own models.
Yeah. I mean, heck, one of Jim's Damiano one list he plays now with his Warpath list. Some of his lists, he's just like, he came down one day to play games of Pegasus, and he had the wrong models with him.
Yeah.
So he made a list with what he had there, and he's like, wow, some of these things are great that I thought were terrible. And the only reason he played them is because that's all he had with him. So he's really changed up his list a lot in the last 6 months, a lot, mainly because he just one day only had certain models to try, and now he uses them all the time.
Well, and it sounds like an excuse, and people think it's a lie or whatever, but a lot of stuff looks bad on paper and can actually work pretty well. Like, I know, like the Cricket. The Cricket, people thought it was overpriced. It's like, that's the worst battle engine. It's too expensive. That thing's amazing.
It's legit.
Jim might buy a second one.
Yeah, I heard you talking about that.
The OAC was the other one. As long as we're stroking Jim off, he just bought a second unit of Ogryn Assault Corps. Like, those things look like overpriced garbage, and turns out that hand cannons with AoEs that are on a medium-based multi-wound unit are pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's just stop being, you know, close-minded.
Yeah.
Or else we'll tell you what the egg beater means.
Nobody wants to know that.
No.
That's just a warning out there.
System Shock 2. Just before you can go further into the egg beaters. One of my favorite classic games, System Shock 2. A lot of people have played Bioshock and Bioshock 2, so you're familiar with them. They are the System Shock and System Shock 2 are the predecessors. They're basically a sci-fi version of a similar thing with psionics and hacking and gun running and RPG elements and everything. And System Shock 2 just a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago now, became available for purchase on GOG.com. They used to be called Good Old Games. I think now the GOG stands for something else. But the point is, you can get it for $10. I super like it. It's got one of my favorite villains ever. It's just a great game. I won't spoil too much.
You better, because I actually downloaded it and I've been.
Yeah, I know you're playing it. I'm not going to spoil anything plot wise or anything. I'm just going to say, you know, if you like the Bioshocks, but you want something more complex, more depth to it. I know Brian, he was actually saying there's almost too much depth to it, which, you know, that's a stance to have if you're, you know, a sissy gay boy and can't actually play complicated games.
It's a game from the 90s where they did, you know, everything is a bit stretched. It's a lot of fun. I think I like to, like, I read Like, I read Glenn Cook because a lot of authors of, like, today were based off of his style. So yeah. I wanted to play System Shock because a lot of my favorite games today are based off of that. So I wanted to go see what the original source code was for a template. Because Dead Space is kind of based on those. BioShock is based off of those.
It's definitely worth the $10 even just for, the history experience of it. Even if you're like, oh, well, that wasn't that good of a game. I don't think it was overhyped. It's still worth the $10 to play it, get several hours of enjoyment and see... Like you're saying, the source of a lot of these now cliched design and thematic choices.
Oh, it's amazing. You play the game, you're like, oh, I see. I mean, because you see a lot of it. Like, oh, that's not a big deal. But that's where so many mechanics came from, was from that game. It's interesting to see the style choices that they made that everything came from. And it's for an old. I usually don't play old games for two reasons. One, old graphics suck. And two, those old games sometimes have the most horrific interfaces in the world. And System Shock interface is not bad for an old game. I mean, it's not smooth, but it's a little clunky, but it's nowhere unplayed. It's pretty good for an old game. And the graphics, they're dated, but they're not bad outdated either. So it's very playable in today's world.
And that's coming from somebody who hates old games.
Oh, I hate old things.
Tolerable.
I only want new technology. Old technology can go fuck itself, is my normal stance.
Yeah. So I won't go more in depth because, spoilers and whatnot. But if you like... RPG-ish first-person shooters. If you like the BioShocks, spend the $10. Get System Shock 2.
My recommendation is if you have a dog. No, this is clean. Is get a book or go online and just Google neat tricks that you can teach them, because they really I spent a lot of time with my dog just teaching it random crap that it can do. Like, it shuts the door, and right now we're working on turning off and on a light switch because. Clearly, dog's jobs.
Your dog called me the other day on the phone. He's like, "How's it going? I need a treat now."
You got a bucket of poop.
But it's one. It gives you something to do. It's kind of a cool hobby, and it's I love showing off for people. And I'm sure they've all seen his tricks a gazillion times, but I don't care. But then it also gives him something to do and something to think about. And now he has a job, and now he's not as mentally. He's not chewing on your carpet as much, is what I'm getting at. He's not bored. Well, and the thing is, one of the things I learned from the doggy daycare where he went, they were talking about it, and 15 minutes of playing with another dog is equal to, an hour's worth of a walk. And so, how do you get a dog who you can't, walk for 9 hours a day, especially in winter, stimulated pretty much? And one of the ways is teaching them, random tricks. Yeah. So anyway, that's my recommendation, is if you have a dog... train them for your own amusement, not so they're nicer when other people come around.
You don't have to teach them important stuff. Weren't you going to teach yours to say its prayers?
Yeah. My end goal is, this is a long trip, is right now I'm teaching them how to turn off the lights, so I want to take them out at night, have them close the door behind them, turn off the lights, say his prayers, and go to bed.
And then close the crate door behind
them. And then close the crate door behind them. That's my... It's a long-term goal, but right now we got close the door, and we're working on switches.
I just look forward to him breaking every light switch in that wall, because I've seen how vigorously he closes that door.
Oh,
He closed that door like it owes him money. He's going after that thing.
Yeah, closed, bitch!
Well, what's great is the other people in our doggy day class talk about how they train their dogs to shut the door, and they're super tentative. And we're like, really? Not our experience. Our dog gives that door the business, man.
Well, to be fair, most people train it to shut the door with his nose, and he didn't like touching things with his nose when he was a little bit littler, and so I taught him to use his paws, and he's heavy.
You should teach him not to eat so much poo.
I can't. I don't know how to do that.
Well, Jeremy, how did you stop?
We almost made it through a whole episode without you trolling me. We almost made it.
I did it several times already.
No, we already talked about Dean.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, no, that came up. That's true. Anyway, were you done? I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay.
Yeah.
My recommendation is actually something Brian brought up that I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I love that thing. Is a super old show called The West Wing, which the same guy that wrote it, Sorkin?
Yes.
Yeah, Aaron Sorkin. He did some other really, really good shows
as
well.
He played Gollum, right?
No. Anyway, he's done some other really good shows too, but...
Was he on MASH?
Alan Sorkin on MASH.
Yeah.
I think that West Wing is some of his best work. And it's a show about a... a group of people that are tenured in the White House for two terms, probably since it went on a bunch of seasons.
Was Bill Pullman the president?
You're going to spoil things from here, aren't you? You're going to be like, seeing random things. About I just started watching.
I'm not spoiling it. What I'm saying
now
is,
I know he wins the re-election.
It's a political show, but one of the things I really like about it is whether you agree with the politics of the party that they're portraying or not, you'll still really enjoy the show. It's not like they spend the whole show going, that other political party is just dumb and we hate them. Because you know what? Back when the show was made, the whole point of politics wasn't to just hate the other side forever and always.
Unless the show was made in the 1200s.
It's not that old of a show.
I'm saying politics today, I think, are more that way than they used to be.
It gets worse.
Yeah, it gets worse over time. And I think when this show was out,
it started pre
9/11. It started pre 9/11,
and it started pre internet. Like,
yeah,
things that the reason people get so divided now is because they can just read stuff that went from
99 to 2006. So there was interweb.
I just want to point out that my brother went to the Naval Academy, and one time I was out there visiting him, and we went to a performance by the choir, the Naval Academy choir, and the theme of this performance was they were singing old political songs, and there was no joke, I forget who the opponent was, but whoever Taft beat in the election to become president, the song was about how Taft liked to dress up as a woman and have sex with animals.
That's fantastic.
It was a campaign song.
That's fantastic.
So I'm just going to say,
so
West Wing's not older than
my
that.
My point is, the show is able to be intelligent and witty and fun, regardless of which political party you support. Like, I'm not even going to say which political party that they represent, because it doesn't matter. It's a good show. I think almost anyone, if you enjoy intelligent drama, if that's like something you enjoy, you will enjoy West.
Well, if it's intelligent, then they don't represent the Green Party. Bazinga!
Bazinga.
Ka-chunkle!
But yeah, it's a really good show. Like, it's a show that I've watched all the way through a couple of times. I would go watch it again. I've been tempted to
load
it up on Netflix.
It just got on Netflix within the last month. That's why I kind of started watching it.
It's good. I like Sports Night.
I thought you canceled Netflix.
Sports Night is
because you said I've watched everything on here.
Netflix. I beat Netflix, and in the last couple months, they've added a bunch of new things
expansion
on there.
Expansion.
They expanded Netflix. I currently was about to cancel
the expansion for Netflix.
They added
Netflix
West
came
Wing,
out.
And they added DS9 and some other stuff. So,
oh, that's right. You were talking about DS9.
Did they have Babylon 5? Fuck it, then. No Babylon 5, I don't want it.
But anyway, West Wing. Good show. Great show. I really enjoyed watching it.
So we've had two requests from things that started in 99. Both.
That's kind of funny when you think about it.
I'll mention there's a website called Baitflix that all it does is tell you what things on Netflix instant streaming have sex scenes and nudity.
What's it called? Hold on.
Jailbait?
No, B-A-T-E.
What is it?
Masturbate.
Baitflix. B-A-T-E-F-L-I-X.
All right, hold on.
That's gross.
So you can look up and you could say, I want something that's streaming, or I want something that's on DVD.
What's gross to one person is time-saving to another.
That's the thing. It's like, I don't want to have to go... Porn's expensive, or like
or free.
Isn't porn free? Yeah.
It depends on how good you are at avoiding viruses.
It depends on your fetish how much. Certain fetishes you just got
to
pay for.
He did talk about how he likes to look up animals having sex, so, you know.
I don't recall ever talking about that.
Maybe he's referring
back
to
Brian.
Back
in episode 10, it totally happened, I remember.
Well, that was...
Well,
yeah, that's special. True.
So. Yeah, we shouldn't talk about that. Either.
So,
Everybody's listened to episode 10 100 times by now. We don't need to dwell on it.
Yeah. So speaking of porn... there's an adult.
I'm not recommending.
Well, hold on. When a woman says, "Speaking of porn," you listen.
We'll come back.
No,
I mean it's not that great of a story. There's an adult store here in town called
Select Video
mm-hmm. and they had a Valentine's Day ad that was like, "Don't get her flowers, get her porn
in a vibrator."
That was pretty much the ad. It was hysterical. They ran it like all the time too.
I love Selective Video because they're not skeevy. Like they're just like, "Hey, come on, porn's awesome." Yeah. And like if you go in there, it's like all clean and well lit. It's not like the skeevy like wear trench coats place. Like, "Hey, how's it going? Dildos over there. They're half price." Yay!
I love the breakup. I love the breakdown on this Baitflix. I can tell right now there is 1,695 examples of bare breasts on Netflix right now. But there's only 794 lesbian scenes, so that really helps me narrow that down. But we only see 543 nipple. I don't know exactly.
Maybe it's side boob?
Yeah, side boob, maybe.
Yeah, must
most
be.
Most of it is probably just in Wild Things alone.
Yeah. Yeah. There's 103 transsexual links.
So there you go.
Crying Game, right?
There's a lot of
spoiler. I just ruined the ending of Crying Game. It's a dude. I mean, it turns out he's a space alien, and then then MacGyver kills him.
Somebody lost their car.
Cuckold.
Cuckold. Only
you can Google Cuckold later.
54 of those.
Andy, did you have a recommendation?
It's going to pale in comparison. It's going to be so geeky. My recommendation is a small five-part TV or internet web series that they put out before Halo 4 came out, which is Forward Unto Dawn, which is, I mean, even if you're not a fan of Halo 4.
Which I'm not. I'm not a Halo fan, but yeah, we watched that.
Yeah, it's just a really neat sci-fi series. That's all it is. It has kind of a very, I'd say, a Battlestar feel to it with the cast and crew.
Yeah, and like it's, you know, they've got the same kind of totalitarian, like, militaristic feel about their society. But no, you're right. Like, I do not like Halo. I think it's overrated crap. I think it's got a decent multiplayer. I think the games, they're C+, B- games that for some reason people are the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
I do think the ending of Halo Reach is one of the greatest moments in the history of video games. But that aside, like, I'm not a big fan of the universe, and I thought this was a super, super good series.
Yeah, yeah. It's easily, I mean, you can watch it streaming online.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can buy it for really cheap, too. It's like $15 at Walmart on Blu-ray. But it's only about an hour and 20 minutes. Each episode's about 20 minutes long. So
yeah, I mean, just set aside an hour and a half like you would to watch a movie and just stream it.
Yep. It is actually really good. Really kind of cool.
Also, you know, you might not remember it, like, not realize it as you play the game, but Master Chief is like 9 fucking feet tall.
Yeah.
Like, when you're playing Halo, you're like, I'm a dude, I'm running around. Then you see him next to a person, you're like, oh my god.
Yeah.
That's gigantic.
Yeah, they do this. The special effects in this are actually really top notch. I mean, they put Sci-Fi Channel to shame. I mean, really, most things will put Sci-Fi Channel to shame.
Yes.
But no, it was actually a really good show. I'd recommend it. That's my recommendation.
Nice.
So anyway, Katie, tell us more about porn. Well, you know, okay. That giving me that awkward facial expression almost counts as telling me about porn.
Almost.
Tell me more about how you like to get choked, and then you're overexcited. I'm going to call you Carol Cheryl from now on because you like to get choked.
Now I want to go watch Archer.
Yes.
I changed my recommendation.
To Archer or to being choked?
To being choked.
I think that's all we should wrap
I
it up.
I need to go meditate now.
And on that note,
I'll grab the egg beater.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
We're so sorry.